up a copy from their independent bookstore. Very well
yes,
worth reading,
absolutely.
Suzanne. Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali. Great to talk to you.
Suzanne Bowen is an award-winning reporter, having spent 12 years working for the Bay Area News Group, which includes the San Jose Mercury News, Contra Costa Times, and Oakland Tribune. She won the White House Correspondents Association Award for her reporting on health disparities. We've just been discussing her new book. It's called 20 Years of Life, Why the Poor Die Earlier, and How to Challenge Inequity. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.
Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on Facebook.com/RU with Sonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on Twitter.com/RU with Sonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Amanda Hill, here with my co-host Jamie Partridge. Tonight we're talking with Bird and Kathy Camper, both youth outreach library workers in the Multnomah County Library System and members of Ask Me Local 88. Good evening, Bird and Kathy.
Hey.
Good evening. Thank you for having us. You're welcome. We're glad to have you. In the midst of a pandemic, when some library workers are working from home, some in the building or out in the community, some on administrative leave, the director of the Multnomah County Library has decided on layoffs of 14% of the 216 library workers because keeping a significant portion of the library's workforce on paid administrative leave is not fiscally responsible. This kind of neoliberal business speak is infuriating and unfortunately is the kind of attack a lot of us who work in the public sector are facing. What's doubly infuriating is that the money is in the budget. There is no budget shortfall. As a labor radio show, we're particularly concerned with the impact on library workers. We'll get to the impact on the public. So Bird or Kathy, tell us how will this impact library workers?
Well, I want to jump in quickly and say something in reaction to your introduction. To people that pay property tax, this money is dedicated property tax money, and by laying people off, they are effectively making people pay twice because the money is there to pay workers, but it's also unemployment. We'll all go on unemployment, so the state will end up paying state tax dollars to fund the unemployment. So I just wanted to make that clear because a lot of people are saying, well, there's layoffs all over the place. But this was dedicated money to go for running the library for a year. And that's partly why we're being so outspoken. So I don't know if Bird, do you want to jump in to the question?
Sure. So the question was, how will this impact library workers? And so I think that there's a two-pronged approach. So there's the personal aspect of it. Obviously, it'll have an impact on people's quality of life, we're living during a pandemic, people need health insurance. If they don't work, they don't have health insurance, and they don't have the money to pay for health insurance outside of work. You know, on another personal level, people seriously could become unhoused. They won't have, they won't be making money. They can't feed their family. And so it could stress, it could add stress to local and national resources. But then internally, the impact it could have on library workers is it would, if you lay off Tafton and there's no consideration of library employees' input, innovation, and ideas, then it will only reinforce the library's top-down leadership approach and hierarchy. And not only that, it communicates to library employees that our input is not valued, and it will only add to the existing and growing tensions between library employees and management under the leadership of Director David Oakey.
Thank you, Berg. So what kind of work have library workers been doing during the pandemic, and why is the library so important at this time?
Well, I have a huge list here, and I probably can't even read them all to you, but, you know, in March when we had to close basically in one weekend, we pivoted, and we've been answering online reference and readers advisory. We've been doing virtual story times for kids and youth and adult and educator programs. We make sure that the summer reading program is happening. It's a free program all summer to keep kids' reading levels up, providing information to parents, educators, and caretakers. We're operating free lunch programs where we give out books when kids come for free lunch. We're coordinating a program to get them those books. We provided content for and access to anti-racism materials, made check-in calls to seniors, continued with completing projects that were pre-COVID. We have a project right now called Library Connect, where we're connecting with school districts so that as soon as kids start school, their student ID will work as an online library card. So they'll be able to use all our virtual services. They don't need to have parents get them a library card. They don't have to come into a building. So that's just some of the things. And then we've been doing non-library work, like work in the temporary homeless shelters, staff emergency operations center, filled in at the county elections office, created masks. We have a maker center, so we've actually been sewing masks for county employees to use on the job. We provide translation services to the county. And a lot of this work was done voluntarily. Like it came from staff ideas, people that could have stayed home and taken administrative leave, but chose to do this work and even risk their health and safety. And I also wanted to say that we were, for people that took administrative leave, oftentimes we were told that that was actually like our duty as a county worker because the governor had called a quarantine. So a lot of people felt like they asked, could we be doing more? And they were told, no, this is how you should clock your work and what you should do. So it was a huge slap in the face when, you know, in July, we're suddenly told we're being laid off because we took administrative leave or, you know, and we all understand that that's going away, but there's so much we could be doing.
Do you want to add to that, Bird?
Yeah, I can add to that. Just one correction. So for the bulk of my career, I did work in youth services, but I actually now work in library outreach service with a focus, strong focus on providing services to those who are less able and those who are senior citizens in the community and those who maybe temporarily, let's say if you get in a car accident and you can't walk or whatever, you are temporarily going through a medical issue. The library, in response to this pandemic, LOS has transitioned its services whereby it used to deliver books, magazines, movies, whatever, to senior care facilities those services have continued. The library mails those services to people. And something else that the library has continued to do is collect ballots during this election year, just with the special election we just had. Folks could still drop their ballots off at the library. The library made sure those ballots were picked up. So, I mean, like Kathy said, we could go on and on about how there's so many opportunities for the library to continue to provide high standard service even during the most challenging and restricting times.
This is amazing. Thank you, Kathy, what type of work were you doing and how did you
Well, I worked for something called School Corps, which is outreach to schools, and we literally I had like one day off and we were on it because all the teachers, everybody was like, what do we do? How do we get books? And, you know, there was days when I, you know, my eyes were blurry from being on the computer and making lists and working with teachers. So we've been, we make something called webliographies, like list of websites that teachers can use to back up their research. We just have chatted with teachers, like how can they find ebooks? And we also visit classrooms virtually where we come in and show kids how to do research and how to find things on the library's website. You know, it's been very stressful. Some school districts said that a lot of kids don't even have computers or Wi-Fi to get on the internet and do their schoolwork. So everybody's been kind of panicking, but I think our youth outreach department, you know, we could double in size in order to reach people virtually in this pandemic, because now we're seeing
parents. I had no idea that the amount of things you guys have been doing during this time, and I didn't even realize that you did this much in regular time. I really am impressed by the way that you guys have stepped up and taken control of the situation. I just wish that management obviously would listen to you more. We understand that due to seniority provisions, these layoffs will impact workers with less than 5 years on the job. How does this particularly impact Black workers of color, especially immigrants and refugees?
So I'll take on how this impacts non-white employees, and I'm quite sure Kathy will add on specifically about immigrants and refugees, Kathy, if that's all right with you. So just by the mere fact of seniority, many of these people will lose their jobs just because they have not been in the library long enough. The cultural inclusion and actively employing and retaining non-white employees is a new thing at the library. So these people simply do not have the seniority to even compete with other folks. And people at the library with the most seniority tend to be white employees. That's just a fact. Another consideration is it further isolates underrepresented communities. In a time of being alone and self-isolating, now more than ever, people need help locating accurate and reliable health information. People are homeschooling for the first time. A lot of parents are saying they don't know how to do this. They don't know what to do. So homeschooling and online education, folks, now would be a great time to learn some new computer skills. The general public may need help with accessing social services and finding employment. The library is an information repository. It is a clearinghouse of information. One thing I want to point out is we support and we are sensitive to the times we are living in. Headlines every single day read that people are being laid off, businesses are closing. The library supports and we are sympathetic to all of that. And I'm not trying to say that the library is somehow better, but what I will say is this. Because of the reasons I just described, the library is uniquely positioned. Because if a restaurant closes, if someone gets laid off from Nike or whatever happens, the library is usually that place where people come to find out about local resources, to build their skills and career development. I mean, so the library is uniquely situated to help other folks who have been laid off, and I don't know that that works in the reverse. I don't know that, that library workers or the general public could go to Nike and get help with being laid off. And so that's a special consideration. Another consideration is a lot of these folks receive additional pay for having, for doing cultural competency work. There is a threat that if these layoffs go through, folks, these folks could get bumped into positions where the library will benefit from these cultural competencies, but these workers won't necessarily receive additional pay. That's all I have. Catherine, do you want to jump in?
Can you explain what you what the word, the phrase cultural competency means for our listeners who may not be familiar with it?
Sure. So, recognizing
that someone that speaks Spanish would get more because they do Spanish-related work.
Right, but it's more than that. So these jobs have what we call a KSA attached to them, knowledge, skills, and ability attached to the actual job description and title. And so because you have that KSA attached to your job, let's say you, like Kathy just said, or let's say you're a member of Portland's Black community, you're hired to connect the library to the Black community and to provide programs and services that meet the needs and desires of a targeted population.
Great. So, Kathy, you were going to talk about the immigrant and refugee community?
Yeah. These are the very same communities that Multnomah County is working so hard to serve. Income, housing, health insurance, as well as people's homes could be lost when library workers lose their job. And listeners might not be aware of this, but a job loss can even affect a person's visa status and their ability to remain in the United States. So they can be deported if they lose their job. And I know of at least one staff person that risks that. Multnomah County Library also provides cultural-specific help, as Bird was explaining, employment resources, and other important services provided by diverse library workers. When these jobs are cut, the lifeline to these communities is also severed, as is the library's relationship with those communities. And I just wanted to quickly emphasize, like with all the fake news going on, a Spanish-speaking worker was mentioning she had two or three people that, you know, were afraid to go for help because they'd heard rumors that ICE was going to be someplace or that they couldn't trust organizations. So it's doubly important to have a trustworthy organization like the library that has cultural links to share information, because there's so much bad information right now.
ICE being Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Pardon?
I'm sorry, ICE. You mentioned ICE, and I just filled in Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Right, right.
Yeah. So how does, well, you explained some by how losing the Black, Indigenous, and people of color, refugee, immigrant workers impact library programs. Some unions have been able to negotiate various types of what is often called super seniority, such that Black, Indigenous, people of color staff can be retained in these layoff situations. What are you attempting to do? What are the kinds of demands that you are making to be able to retain these folks?
Well, I think our demand is simple. It's don't lay anybody off. You have the money to pay us. And then I think more broadly, we would like a less pyramid-shaped structure. Right now we have, you know, management that's very secretive. In fact, coming on the show, we don't even know exactly a lot of the figures of, you know, how many people are affected. Like, information is sort of comes out sporadically. So I think it's the whole structure is very colonialist and white supremacy based. And I know that that's something a lot of people are talking about. There's a new book that's out called Caste, talking about how that it's not just racism, how racism in the U.S. works, but that there's like a caste system. And when I heard that, I thought, that's the library. Because even as Bird spoke about the KSAs, you have some BIPOC staff that is given KSAs and some that doesn't. So right there you have a split, a caste system, you know, some people that are getting more money, others that aren't. So I think the whole system needs to be looked at, and especially the managerial system at top.
And I want to add on, if I can, to what Kathy is saying. I want to add just a little bit. So it's important to mention that the county, including the library, a couple years back embarked on an initiative to lead by race, having finally admitted and acknowledged the racism and discrimination that many, particularly black employees at the county, including the library, experiences. So there's this initiative to lead by race, but the question has to be asked, how can you lead by race if you're getting rid of non-white employees? And Jamie, you know as well as I do the historical significance of the Albina community in Portland. Well, the Albina branch of Multnomah County Library had recently hired its black librarian in 2020. They recently hired their black librarian. This librarian may lose her position. She may lose her position, and then the library recently acknowledged, oh, we don't have enough representation of Native folks in our staff. So my understanding, Kathy, you can correct this if I'm not up to date on this, is that talks were starting to happen to add a Native KSA.
Hello.
That position, that possibility could go away, and then getting rid of these folks would eliminate potentially inclusive programming. It would limit the reach of the library. Another thing I wanted to mention is when it comes to cultural specific service, people tend to want to talk to people who speak their language, who are from their culture, and who looks like them, but the most detrimental impact I believe this will have is it disrupts and destroys established and reliable relationships with community members and partners. And oftentimes when this happens, there's often no follow-up. There's just an end to the program. But library employees literally watch little children grow up and go off to college. There's no way to replace those invaluable relationships. You know, senior citizens come into the library as technology novice, and they leave as iPad experts. Libraries help newly arrived immigrants access resources, build English language skills. But in order to do that, you need to have non-white staff in position to provide that specialized service to these communities.
Well, and also I think, you know, to add to the former point, you need to move BIPOC staff up in the hierarchy of the library or in the running of the library. You got to stop having them all at the bottom level and then kick them out and start over, you know. It's like, until we have a more diverse staff throughout the library, you know, then you're going to see it be more fair.
What can our listeners do to act in solidarity with the library workers?
Oh, well, we've got some good plans. We have a website, and my first thing would be to recommend they go to the website, which is www.savelibrarystaff.org. because all our actions are listed there. We'd love to have you write letters to Vailey Oakley, the library director, and Chair Kafuri and the commissioners. And something else you can do if you're active on social media is to post photos of yourself or statements of support with the hashtag NoMC, MC Library Layoffs. And all of those actions are on the website. So the main thing would be to go to the website, and that's www.savelibrarystaff.org.
And another thing folks can do, getting to some of the long existing issues at the library in terms of how the library hires, retains, and promotes
it would be great if folks wanted to contact the county auditor, Jenny McQuirk, and ask her to conduct an audit of the library, because I don't know that that has ever happened. Conduct an audit of the library's hiring practices, retention and promotion, and overall treatment of library staff. And for, and also being fiscal responsible, particularly during this time, because this year is paid for. The positions are paid for. There is no reason for the library to lay folks off. The only thing I can think of is this is a ploy to convince the voting public that they need to vote for the bond that's coming up. But this year is literally paid for. It makes no sense.
Well, and I just wanted to kick in that I saw a program on, you know, during the Depression when they had like WPA and CCC and they were raving about all the things the workers did and how like all our parks have stone fences and buildings from that work. And it made me think, you have 128 paid employees for a year. What could you do with that for the public?
Right.
And you know, to the listeners, I want to ask them, like, instead of just going in a private room and say, let's get rid of them all, could you have met with us or brainstormed? There's so much that we could do, and especially with the virus. People need services more than ever. So that's where we're coming from.
The only highlight, Jamie, really quickly, if I can say this, is the spotlight is on the library's leadership. And that spotlight, in my opinion, should have been shown on Multnomah County leadership a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you want any last thoughts before we close out?
That would be it.
Think about who's making the decisions, but also the library is, like, listeners, it is your library, and you know, we want you to have what you pay for. So you know, we hope that you'll take action, because this is a specific move. It's not just a layoff like all the other stuff going on. So it's important.
All right. Well, there we are. www.savelibrarystaff.org. Talking with Bird and Kathy Camper, Youth Outreach Library Workers with Multnomah County Library. Thank you to both of you for coming on Labor Radio.
Thank you for having us.
That wraps it up for Labor Radio this Monday night and every Monday night from 6 to 6:30. Our guests this evening were Kathy Camper and Bird, library workers in a struggle against layoffs. Again, their website is savelibrarystaff.org. Thanks to our engineer, and stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a program director to manage our programming department. This full-time position requires proven experience in program directing, radio audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork and a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. The deadline to apply for this position is Saturday, October 3rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Personnel Committee meets on the second Monday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Beyond These Walls is a trans-led organization with a number of programs that support LGBTQ prisoners in the Pacific Northwest and currently run a COVID hotline for people incarcerated in Oregon and Washington. My guest from Beyond These Walls is Biff Chaplow. But before we get started, I want to remind our listeners that you are tuned in to your community-supported radio station, KBOO Portland. It is our fall membership drive, and you can donate right now at kboo.fm/give. Please show your support for KBOO. Please show your support for Prison Pipeline. Please donate right now at kboo.fm/give. And thank you so much to all our listeners. And now, back to my guest, Biff Chaplow from Beyond These Walls. Welcome, Biff.
Hi.
So, Biff, as I said, Beyond These Walls is a trans-led organization, and the staff and advisory committee are exclusively LGBTQ. So how did this organization get started?
Sure. So Beyond These Walls started almost 10 years ago. And, you know, what happened was, is letters across the country were sort of piling up at various LGBT social justice nonprofits. And, you know, many organizations don't have the infrastructure to answer those letters. And so Beyond These Walls came out of a decision to just simply answer those letters. What we started with was answering the letters. And from that, we found quickly that people had a deep desire to be connected to community,